communication duration, location where the communication occurred, and any other pertinent information, which is a catch-all. And then for conditional degree of difficulty, if you know that you are communicating with a lobbyist, you have to inform the lobbyist that they have to provide you with a copy of their communication so that you can include it in your reporting to the Procurement Policy Board. This is from, again, from the statute.
Well, is the lobbyist a registered lobbyist? I mean, everybody walking around is a lobbyist. If they talk, they communicate, they want to influence you in somehow. I mean,
yeah, no, and I believe the lobbyist provision is for lobbyists that are registered. And the question came up about whether or not you have to check the state website to see whether the person you're communicating with is a registered lobbyist. The answer to that is right now, no, you don't. But if you have a strong suspicion that they are, or you know that they are, then you should ask them to provide you a copy of the communication regarding those points.
I mean, lobbyist X calls up and says, I'd like you to meet with Mr. Saldana, who's my client, blah, blah, blah. What communication? I mean, you say, okay, I'll be happy to meet them and discuss it. Mm-hmm. What do they have to provide?
The lobbyists, right?
Pardon?
You're saying that the lobbyists also have to report that they have to have this, they have this conversation.
Oh, on their end?
On their end, they have to
provide
all of the fields that you have to fill out.
Yeah.
And the thought behind that is when you are having communication with a vendor, their trust, the state trusts state employees to accurately report that information.
No, that's, I was thinking, we don't have access to their files. So in other words, they have their own reporting system as lobbyists.
Probably they don't have their reporting system,
yeah,
but they have an application.
Yeah, there are requirements there. So if X contacts one of us as a board member and says, I'd like to meet with so-and-so, it's their obligation to report on their side. Who do we report to as board members?
Okay, and I will be getting into the recommendations from the staff, but we have provided you a copy of a memorandum, which kind of introduces the requirement. It also provides you with a template for how you can fill out with all of the fields required. And we are still working this out, but I believe what the guidance will be is that you can fill out that form manually or on the computer and then send it into the tollway, and we'll be responsible for communicating to the Procurement Policy Board.
Okay.
It might be a good time to talk about the tollway-specific web portal that we have. We do have something that leverages our SharePoint system. We work with IT extensively on it. It is a backup system right now. As I said, we were communicating with the state, with CMS, and there is anticipated to be a statewide system where we will report information. But the tollway is trying to make sure that we are going to comply with all provisions of the law. And as a result, we did develop an internal backup system, and we have that ready to be deployed. The last thing I'll say about this is that there will be training for staff, and there will be training for the board on an as-needed or as-requested basis. We want to make sure that everyone is comfortable with the new requirements. Okay, so now you've reported the communication. What happens when someone is very aggressive about trying to market what they do? I've reproduced a section of the procurement code that will go into effect July 1st. And I'm sorry, there's no alternative but to read it. There's no person or business shall bid or enter into a contract under this code if the person or business, one, assisted in determining whether there's a need for the contract, or two, assisted by reviewing, drafting, or preparing a request for proposal or request for information to provide similar assistance. This one's a little bit easier. I think everyone is comfortable with the idea that people that are doing business with us currently under contract shouldn't be informing our next solicitation. We had a very good example earlier with Unisys. And I think Ed has got the right approach. We talk to them about contract administration. We do not talk to them about what things should be in the next solicitation. That would be unfair. The first one is a little bit harder. The first one is open to interpretation. There are at least two interpretations. What is assisting the state of Illinois or a state agency in determining whether there's a need for a contract. Does that cover someone who has a really good mousetrap and wants to come over here and talk to us about the really good mousetrap? And then we put out a solicitation for a mousetrap. Are they going to be precluded from responding? Potentially, yes. Potentially, this hasn't been worked out. Under a different interpretation, if a vendor comes in and says, I've got a mousetrap, and we take all the information, and then we have discussions subsequent to that presentation, and we make a determination internally that, yes, this is something we should do, then that was not the vendor determining or whether or not we needed something. That was totally staff determining whether we needed something or not. This is unclear, and we are hoping that it will be cleared up in the days and weeks to come, but you have to be aware now that there are some communications that you can have, potentially, with people that could cause them to become a prohibited bidder down the road. And the one recommendation that I have for you is that if a vendor starts becoming too aggressive and starts talking to you and being very specific about what you should or shouldn't do, or what the agency should or shouldn't do, you may want to remind them, or at least make them aware that there's this provision, and any sort of aggressive marketing could potentially be considered in determining whether or not they are a prohibited bidder.
So in the context of a potential referral situation to something that you hear or talk to somebody about, you say, geez, we ought to consider that. I can refer them to you without telling them, and they, if they call you and talk to you about something that makes sense and staff determines that it's appropriate to move forward on the latest and greatest green thing, that's okay.
Yes. We are trying to balance out, I think, the very real need by the board to be able to hear ideas from the marketplace, to be able to consider new things. I think rather than engaging them very directly about what their ideas are, I think if you merely pass that information along to staff so that we can follow up on the tollway's behalf, I think that would be a good approach.
Again, in a couple months' time, hopefully, when we get final recommendations and guidance, that may change. Mm-hmm. So, but just to be clear, it's an iterative, right, evolving process.
Thank you. I struggle sometimes to try to give people bright lines, but I have to ground myself in the idea that sometimes it is okay to tell people we just don't know entirely yet. So this falls into that.
Let me give you an example. In the business I was in, if a firm, an underwriting firm, comes to either a board member or to Christy or to Mike and says, we think you should do, you know, we think there's a new idea in the marketplace where instead of doing annual maturities on bond issues, you have one bullet maturity the 25th year, and you can do this and that, and you can use VAB, you know, the new federal guideline. Have they just prohibited themselves from bidding if we in fact do a 25-year single maturity bond issue from being a vendor?
I don't know. That's why I have to say it's uncomfortable to say that, but potentially.
Because I know in that industry, people are saying now they will cease to speak to client governments, which therefore means that half the reason in the underwriting world that we have a list of approved underwriters is to get ideas from those underwriters on how we can build another better mousetrap. So in essence, we would be better to tell them not to talk to us anymore. Right. And we just do very traditional, dull bond issues.
Never.
Well, he could come up with brilliant ideas on his own, I'm sure.
Well, I know Mike Wong has almost got all his brilliant ideas.
I'm sure he could have come up with the synthetic CDOs that go with it.
That's
right.
Pretty traditional and dull.
Yeah. But I mean, that's on a bigger scale. On a smaller scale, as a board member, it seems like a lot of times when people want to talk to me, it's not necessarily they feel they maybe didn't get a fair shake in getting business with the tollway. Would I then be required to say, here, I talked to so and so, and they didn't feel they're getting a fair shake, and they feel blah blah blah?
Yes. That is a written oral communication that is received by a state employee.
And then there will be no, if they felt that was the case of a tollway department didn't treat them fairly, then that department will have a copy of that report so they can screw them even further?
No, I don't assume that our employees ever have those kind of motives in mind. But in that situation, Director Morris, if there is someone who feels that they haven't been treated fairly during the procurement process, please encourage them to talk to me. I'm the steward of the procurement process, and we have guidelines set out for how to protest, and I am aware that sometimes companies believe that there is a negative stigma attached to protesting, but I've always been very clear to companies that that won't happen, at least while I'm here.
Well, this is more reflecting past history of the tollway, where there was a feeling that there were insiders who had special opportunities and others who didn't. And, you know, we have tried, I think, in the 7 or 8 months I've been here to try to dispel people of that, but the reality is there is still residual out there from those past feelings.
Thank you. Let me go through the staff recommendations then very quickly. We just talked about the first one, that this is an evolving process and that we will have updated information. One recommendation that I have to you is that it's a company that could potentially become a prohibited bidder, so they should become aware, and you should let them know that potentially them bringing new ideas to you and helping us in assisting determining whether or not we need their services could potentially preclude them from bidding. You have the reporting tool. We will have more information about how to use it, but please fill it out beginning July 1st, 2010. Also inform procurement.
Is that going to be prospective?
It is going to be prospective in nature.
Not conversations that we've had today.
Yes, and thank you. That's a very important distinction. The reporting requirement is prospective in nature. Conversations that you have that might not be required to be recorded now, though, can be the basis for precluding someone from bidding down the road.
Sounds to me like it's best to avoid it. You're talking about it now. What's the difference if we know it now?
Oh, the reporting.
We're going to run ahead and do all this stuff before July 1st. I think you just say we start following it at least basically. Because as directors, we talk to people all the time because they'll seek us out at events because mm-hmm. they know who we are. And, it's going to be easy to say now, I can't talk to you about any of this. Call Paul. And good luck with that, Paul.
That could be,
but I'm somewhat tongue-in-cheek there. But what I'm saying is I think it's best to start taking the ideas that have been presented that are going to be required shortly and just start implementing them informally on your own, because it only makes sense to do that. And I think in many respects that's been the practice here, because when somebody tells me they have a good idea, I say, yeah, that sounds pretty good, here's the guy to call, and then I stay out of it.
But I think the minute they've told you the idea, then the rule is kicked in. I try to say to people, just give me, in the bond world, I say, just give me an overview of the market, and I'll let people know that you talk to me. God love you. I send a note to Mike, say, so-and-so told me all about the market. They may be stopping to see it, because I don't want to know their new idea, because unfortunately, I think you might be accidentally prohibiting them. But at the same time, part of our job as board members is to be ombudsman for the public, and the public includes vendors who might be or would like to do business with the tollway, and we want to be careful that we don't create a situation where we lose that part of our job, because otherwise you can run into a situation where a rogue department head or a rogue manager or a individual rogue manager could do something that in fact is inappropriate, and we've failed in our duty to be, watchdogs of the public.
I don't want to step on Christie's toes here, but it does seem to me if somebody is accusing the agency of wrongdoing, we have at least two routes to go. One would be to go to the executive director, and if she's not available to talk about that, and you could refer me to them. And the second is to Jim Wagner, who's the inspector general, if they think there's something illegal or untoward that's going on. If they think they've been treated badly, then it seems to me you start with the executive director and you say we need to make sure that the departments are functioning in a way that gives everybody confidence that things are being done in a fair way, and there will be no retribution. And in fact, you could ask Christy to make sure that whatever the concern is doesn't come to the attention of the department connected to a name of a particular vendor.
But I think under this, we would have to disclose a conversation in the record, which would be a public record.
But you don't have to say it was a complaint about something or other, I don't think. You say that there has been a communication?
It's a written or oral communication that is regarding, that is trying to convey a material point. And I'm sorry, I'm like parroting the statute.
If
but
I may, Doug actually worked on this for CMS. Do you want to weigh in here?
Well, I think it all boils down to the question, what's material and what's not material, and that's the one thing that's still evolving. I think that the best thing to do is just keep in mind, use a reasonable man standard when you're engaged in the public, okay? Common sense is the operative, you know, advice I can give at this point because it's still evolving. You know, it's important to also note that the contract can be started now but not signed until after July 1st. And so because of that, in effect, you can be having communications now. And if the contract is executed after July 1st, that comes into play. So I think you just have to, you know, keep a very reasonable man standard when you're interacting with potential vendors.
Right. The purpose is not to allow people not to complain about other things going on. It's just simply to avoid the appearance of impropriety or impropriety in handing out contracts. So, I mean, Dr. Morris, to your comments, you can listen to somebody that can complain about how the toll is running or anything, and that's perfectly fair. I don't think it's directed at that at all. That wasn't the purpose.
Right. I mean, it's I think intended to add more transparency to the overall procurement system. And that's the intent of the law.
But to your point here, I mean, there's a great deal still of, you know, there's a lack of clarity. So, you know, whether a specific vendor feels that they were somehow treated poorly during the procurement process and how much of that would be required and the details of that would be required to be reported, I think, you know, hopefully we will know more by the time that this is implemented. Well,
the standard I've been using, which is at least to me the easiest standard, I say that was then, this is now. Whatever you feel is unfortunate going forward, we're trying to have a level playing field. There is a process. And if you go into that process and you still feel you weren't treated fairly, come back and see us. I mean, I think that's the easiest way to handle it, because whatever their perceived slights were, it's water over the dam at this point, and there's not much we can do about that. If they specifically say there was so-and-so did ABC, then you call Jim Wagner and say, please look into it. But it's mostly this general, you know, it seems to be the same five or six contractors get all of the work. You've had the same consulting engineer for 60 years or 50 years. You know, why aren't those doors open? So it's more just a general thing. And my thing is just, you know, God love you. You know, going forward, if you have the same issue comes up from this point forward, you know, let us know. And we've got processes in place to try to make sure that doesn't happen. So.
You could do what my kids and wife do when I talk to them, is they look at me and act like they're listening, but they're really not.
Do they report it?
No. They act, they report, but they're not. They act like they never heard it.
All of the things that we're talking about now are communication regarding upcoming procurements. They don't necessarily fall into how someone has been treated in the past. So please remember that this is about post-practice communication. There will be regular business communications that you will have, and you don't have to make the decision in a vacuum right now about whether or not someone's going to be a private bidder or not. But our recommendation is that you make that company aware that there is that risk and decide, and have the company decide what level of risk they also want to take on, because you're not required to make the decision for them. Just be aware, make them aware, tell them what's going to happen though if the information is reported. It will be provided to the Procurement Policy Board. It will be published on the website, and it will be available for public viewing.
I have a very silly minor question. I think we need to stop referring. I assume we're going to stop referring to this with Senate Bill 51. When we say to somebody there is a new law that's going into effect, what is the shorthand that we should be using so everybody knows?
So
Public Act 960795. I'm sorry,
doesn't it have a name?
No, it doesn't. The procurement reforms. Everyone has been using Senate Bill 51 as the shorthand.
Yeah,
procurement
reforms, I would say.
New Procurement Reform Act.
Yeah.
960795.
Can we put on our website a little link to Procurement Reform Act that people can go look at?
You have the site here.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
I know you, yeah, I was afraid you would put that up.
Okay, thank you, Albert. You know, we have more clarity now, but at least we have information. So, no, I appreciate that very much. I know that this has been a topic at other and previous board meetings, so I just wanted to take a moment to reassure all the directors that I am reviewing and updating tollway policies relative to tollway vehicles and employee transponder use. Earlier this month, the governor's office came out with an official policy and updated guidance for state agencies on vehicle usage. So we are going to be looking at that and I think aligning what we do with some of the policies as appropriate that the governor's office has mandated for state agencies' vehicle usage. So I will send that update. I will send out an update outlining any changes that we make there and what ultimately we decide on those policies to you soon. I know that we've had a series of future project presentations. Chair Wolf implemented those, which I think is a great idea, and she has kindly allowed me some time to get up to speed on some of those major projects before we start those up again. So I didn't want, though, to let the time on your agenda pass without providing some additional information to you. So I've asked Tom Bamonte to update us on a couple of pieces of legislation that may pass before our next board meeting, assuming that the General Assembly keeps to their timeline and actually does get out when they say that they're going to. They may pass before we
Assembly may actually pass something?
It's entirely possible, and it's entirely possible that two of those items will pass the tollway. Specifically, the Office of the Inspector General legislation, and then there is a piece of pending legislation of public-private partnerships that may also have an impact on us. So, Tom, without further ado,
thank you, Christy. I can see the board steeling themselves after the previous presentation, but actually the news is pretty good. Senate Bill 3118 establishes an Office of the Tollway Inspector General. Now, the board, as you know, established a Inspector General office in 2003, but a recent law abolished Inspector General offices unless they were established by statute. So, hence this bill and the statute. It's been proposed by Senator Garrett. The Tollways work closely with her and her staff on drafting, and it's passed the Senate and is now in the House. The bill establishes standard qualifications and appointment process for the Tollway Inspector General. The appointment will be by the governor with the consent of the Senate. There's requirements of relevant experience and background. The Inspector General for the Tollway will have a 5-year term, a removal only by the governor for cause, and interesting feature of the legislation, there's protection of the Tollway Inspector General's office budget from any major cuts. That helps preserve the independence of the office and ensures that there's sufficient resources.
What's the budget now? Is that our starting line?
I think as this goes into effect, they'll have to work out a baseline, and I think that's
a reasonable budget.
That is, as Christy has indicated, she's looking at staffing and organization, and we'll establish a baseline at the appropriate time. The jurisdiction of the Tollway Inspector General, again, very similar to other agency-specific inspector generals. The mission is to detect, deter, and prevent fraud, mismanagement, corruption, etc. The coverage, the jurisdiction of the Tollway Inspector General will include board members, employees, vendors, prospective vendors, subcontractors, and others who are doing business or seeking to do business with the tollway. Now, there's a category of cases that arise under the State Ethics Act, things like improper gifts or politicking on state time. Those Ethics Act violations will continue to go to the State Executive Inspector General as they do today. And there's some provisions in the law that mandates cooperation between the Tollway Inspector General and the Executive Inspector General. The powers of the Inspector General, again, a standard suite of powers, guaranteed access to employees and documents, subpoena power. The Inspector General will serve as primary liaison with law enforcement. There's a directive to review tollway personnel and hiring decisions and make sure that there's compliance with RUTAN, which requires that most hiring be freed from political influence. And there's also the power to investigate anonymous complaints. This was a power recently given to the State Executive Inspector Generals, and the Tollway Inspector General will have this power as well. There's accountability measures written into the bill. The Inspector General will have to establish and follow a set of administrative rules covering the the operations of their office. There's regular reporting to the board, to the General Assembly, to the governor. Investigation reports where there's a violation found, those reports will be posted publicly on the TOA website. There are confidentiality requirements covering the Inspector General and his or her staff. There are limits on involvement in political activity, both while they're here and while the Inspector General employs, I believe, for a year after employment here. And there's a requirement that if there are matters that are outside the jurisdiction but require review, that those matters be referred to the appropriate authorities. The bill, again, has passed the Senate and is now pending in the House. The next bill, HB 4623, is the Public-Private Partnership Bill. And this authorizes IDOT and the Tollway to engage in public-private partnerships. Those are situations where a private entity will operate or build and operate a public transportation facility. We have some local examples with the Skyway and the Indiana Toll Road, where you have a private operator of a public asset. Some other parts of the country, PPPs are being used to both construct and operate highways and other transportation facilities. And PPPs are already authorized in about half the states, so this is not cutting-edge legislation. The authorization covers IDOT and the Tollway. It extends to developing, financing, and operation of transportation facilities. And there's some limits, though, with respect to the Tollway. The legislation bars the Tollway from leasing its systems for cash, and it also prohibits the Tollway from using PPPs on its existing system to, you know, for rehabbing stretches of road, et cetera. But what it does allow the Tollway to do is to use PPPs for new toll highways, for non-highway transportation infrastructure, let's say a high-speed rail down a tollway corridor, or to implement intelligent transportation systems. The law establishes a multi-layer approval process. Each year, the tollway will have to report to the General Assembly and local governments the PPP projects it's contemplating. Before it can go forward with a procurement, the tollway will have to get the approval of the General Assembly. The procurement process gives the agency a lot of tools in its procurement toolbox. It can do a PPP through a best value RFP, or it could do a low bid IFB approach. After the procurement process, then the law sets out requirements for a public-private partnership agreement. That agreement then has to go through a public hearing, review by the Commission on Government Forecasting Accountability, and ultimately the governor has to approve a public-private partnership before it becomes effective. There's some additional provisions in the bill that are of interest to the tollway. It expressly encourages the use of congestion pricing. It mandates, and this is something that we were successful in getting in the bill, it requires that any electronic tolling system used in Illinois on a PPP project be compatible with the tollway's IPAS system. That was an important feature. Another provision that the tollway was successful in getting the bill is a requirement that if a public entity submits a bid to do a project, that proposal will be considered on equal footing with the proposals from private entities. So, for example, if the tollway wanted to do a PPP for a new toll road, IDOT could come in and say, hey, we can do this job more cheaply, we can keep lower tolls during the duration of the project, and vice versa. So it puts public entity proposals and private sector proposals on equal footing. The bill provides that the agencies themselves, IDOT and the tollway, will administer the procurement as opposed to CMS. And finally, it bars non-competes. And by non-competes, it bars the tollway from agreeing to refrain from building competing roads. So it means that you can go into a PPP, but you can't tie your hands to build projects that may pull traffic off of that PPP facility. So this bill has passed the Senate. The tollways work very closely with Senator Steen's sponsor, with the Metropolitan Planning Council. This is a very dynamic environment. There may be other PPP bills of different nature that have flowed up, but this one is the one that has proceeded farthest in the legislative process.
One question on the, like, public entities, would that same process apply if, say, we wanted to privatize a function within the tollway that prior department or somehow could bid to keep that as a public employee providing service?
There'd be no prohibition. The law would certainly not prohibit that. And again, it's focused on transportation facilities, the development of transportation facilities. In terms of back office or administrative functions, it doesn't speak to that. So absolutely, during the procurement process, there's really no restrictions on who may bid, as long as they're responsible.
So is it possible that, looking at other governmental bodies perhaps, that the tollway could look to jointly construct one of the new projects that's been on Projects of the Future with a local county and have them participate in the revenue?
There's multiple ways that could be done through if it's public to public, those kind of arrangements could be done through an intergovernmental agreement, or it could also be done through this process as well. So this is in addition to the toolbox that the tollway already has through, like, intergovernmental agreements, and it allows the tollway to enlist the private sector. But in addition, in that process, if other public entities bring something to the table, they absolutely can.
So it leaves the existing 286 miles of the system and how revenue is generated intact. This is prospective.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I think that it's very exciting. We'll see what ultimately happens, but potentially very exciting for us to consider the flexibility that this would provide down the road. And I think that depending on, again, what happens during the legislative process, we'll have a future briefing from some of the staff here to really talk more specifically to some of the policy implications of, again, whatever ultimately comes out of the general assembly.
Yeah, because you could see a number of counties that I've talked to about different projects that they'd like to see done. Well, now they get a chance to participate in it, and maybe it gets done sooner because it's, you know, got that local involvement and commitment at a much higher level.
And I'm aware, I think E470 in near Denver is consortium of public entities mm-hmm. that
right.
came together.
It is.
So there are some existing models out there in the industry.
And we can speak more to some of those once we see ultimately what the statute is, assuming that there is something that is passed mm-hmm. and signed into law, and what the implications of that might be, but it is exciting.
Great. Thank
you.
Nothing
else. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Hey, Tom, really hard with the legislators on both of these bills, so thank you.
So I always like to end on a high note, which I'm happy to do now, and invite us to hear a little bit more about an upcoming Safety Seat campaign, which is incredibly important, and we partner with the Illinois State Police District 15 to remind drivers not only to buckle up themselves, of course, but to protect their youngest passengers. This year, the Tollway is teaming up again with District 15 to continue our annual Child Safety Seat campaign. It's a top priority for the district, and one that we take a great deal of pride in promoting as well. And I had the occasion to meet with Captain Jesnick earlier this week and was briefed on a variety of things relative to District 15 and the State Police, but this is certainly one of them. It's a very exciting potential partnership. In 2009, District 15 and the Illinois Tollway hosted more than two dozen child safety seat events with a number of local partners, inspecting more than 850 seats and replacing many that were out of date or damaged. This year, District 15 will be reaching out again with the help of local partners like the AAA, Safe Kids, Winnebago, and Pioneer Press, and others who've agreed to support our events and our efforts here. As our customers prepare for the summer travel season, the Tollway and District 15 think that it's very important to launch another campaign to just make sure that they're traveling safely. Folks throughout the communities that the Tollway serves, as well as customers on the road, will have an opportunity to stop by for child safety seat inspections as they prepare to travel over the holidays and in the coming months. So, thank you very much to Captain Jesnick and Sergeant Jim Jankner for their efforts. And if you'd like to say a few words about the campaign, I'd be, you know, love it if you could give us a brief overview.
Yes, we're very proud to have this great partnership. Obviously, as you can see from the pictures, this is a great and very beneficial public safety initiative. I'd like to introduce to you Sergeant Jim Jankner. Jim is our safety education officer and also the coordinator of this project. Jim?
Thank you for inviting me up here today. As we all know, being parents and or grandparents, especially in this day and age, how frustrating it can be to put that first child seat into a car. More often than not, believe it or not, 80% of the time that people come to our events, seats are installed improperly. We in District 15 have 10 certified technicians that work throughout the system in various counties, various locations to help the public out to make our children safe and grandchildren safe each and every trip. What I brought today was a most common seat that is out there. It's a convertible seat. It's for starting off with your infant, basically anywhere from 16 months of age or younger. You can put it in a rear-facing position, and then we switch it around to front-facing position as a child grows older. These particular seats, however, are the ones most commonly installed improperly because of latch systems and things like that. What will happen occasionally is somebody will come in, they'll crisscross seat belts in the back of the seat and put the latch system on, thinking it's totally secure. The seat belt still bounces around, and we are there to make sure that we can tighten it up. Some of the other common mistakes or errors that we find are in the harness systems in the front, where parents haven't made them secure enough or tight enough to hold their child in to the seat as they're driving. And especially this time of the year, we recommend seasonally adjusting those harness straps, because you're taking that winter clothing off, those winter coats off, your kids are now in hoodies or t-shirts and things like that. And worst of all, what we do look for is this breast plate here to make sure that it comes across the shoulder height or nipple line, as we refer to it. Why? Because that secures the chest portion of the child in the seat. In case of a possible crash, or what we recommend is, even during normal driving in your vehicle, you have to realize that 55, 60 miles an hour, if you hit the brakes hard enough, your child's going to move with the car. If that breastplate is down below the abdomen, the upper portion of your child can slide out. You can injure your child even by not being in a crash, as unfortunately we see occasionally out there on the road. So again, the purpose of our program has been highly successful. We've been partnering with the Toll Road since 2000, and we continue to get new partnerships each and every year on all our different events with the children. And in this case, that photo represents last year's culmination. We destroyed 96 seats, and the reasons for destroying seats are this. When you come to a child seat event, not only will we look at the integrity of the seat, but we'll make sure that it's not on a recall list. We'll make sure that all the parts are operational. We highly recommend to people not to pick up seats at a garage sale or on the internet, eBay, and common sites like that. Why? Because they don't know who previously owned the seats. Seats do age, the integrity of the strap, the integrity of the plastic of the seat diminishes. So what we do in turn is we do take the seats away from people if they appear to be non-functioning or functioning improperly. And at the end of the year, we do destroy them so that they don't get back into circulation on the street. When somebody comes to an event and they have a seat that we have to take away, and let's say they can't afford a replacement seat, we do provide free seats to them at no cost. The event itself is no cost. And we also do not wear our uniforms when we are at child seat events for the main purposes, because it's public relations. And we want everybody to feel comfortable and know that we're not there to write tickets, we're not there to run warrant checks on your driver's license, and things of that nature. So we welcome everybody with open arms to come and be safe. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Christy, if I can, this is truly is a PR effort, a communications effort, and some of the directors have been here longer know that we pitch this every spring, and we make a concerted effort to find partners in the communities. A lot of that means that not just the Troopers, but we sponsored in the past, we've had Babies R Us. This year we've got AAA as a outstanding partner with the toy on this project. We look to you as our ombudsman to the communities. If you have potential partners where the toy can host an event, we would love to hear it. If there are local radio stations or news stations, Pioneer Press is a sponsor with us, and they've been terrific in getting the message out. The greater visibility we can have for this, the better. As somebody with kids and young kids, my seat was staged out for our infancy, and I didn't know it until I had to flip it over and stamped in the plastic of it. I've already got three. So, you know, as we go through the cycle, it's important that we do it regularly. We appreciate your support on this year over year.
Can we do any of these within the city limits?
Really do it on our system? You do, I'm sorry, I won't.
The state police does them in other areas. As a matter of fact, I, in my previous job, hosted one out near the medical district in the city. So they are done statewide. Jim coordinates ours that are on or near our system.
I will say selfishly, though, ours is better. when we had our first, I had to hunt for a place to do this. And these guys were the ones that constantly pop up. It's very busy.
Okay. Any other questions on that?
Mm-hmm.
Tom, are you still on the phone? Maybe not.
Yes, I am.
I just thought if there's anything that has transpired since we started, we're going to go into the consent agenda, I think. Christy, are you
yeah,
done?
Yes, I'm done.
Okay, thank you. So was there anything you wanted to comment on? I know it's very hard because we don't really pause and let the speaker speak.
No, that's, I appreciate it. There's one or two things that I'll follow up on after the meeting just to get some more detail.
Okay, great. All right, then we'll launch into the consent agenda, if that's okay. We'll start with finance, 5-1. Number one, the approval of the liability insurance policy. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, that passes. Let's go to 5-2, procurement, and I think we can do all of these, the first six, together. Second? All
second.
In favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, thank you. Then we'll go to business systems. That's one item. May I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, that passes. Then we'll go to 5-4, engineering. And why don't we take, I think we can take all of these together, 1 through 10. May I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Those pass as well. And then 5-5, legal. We have three items there.
Move to approve.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Okay, those three passed. Thank you. Very expeditious. Is there any unfinished business that anyone would like to raise?
Just maybe.
Okay.
comment. Again, welcome to Christy and Doug joining us here. And I think it's also important to recognize the job that Mike King did for the last,
yes,
must seem like 5 or 6 or 7 years, but perhaps the last 18 months. It's a tough position. We have a very big responsibility here, and he's discharged the duties well. And you and the team that you have here have done a great job, and we look forward to the enhancements that are forthcoming, because nothing is 100% except the dollar. It's a dollar, it's 100% all the time. But when you're talking about these types of things, improvement is always something that can be done, and we just need to look forward to that. But I wanted to take the time to thank Mike for the job done.
Thank you.
Thank you. New business? Anybody have anything that he or she would like to raise? Okay, well then I think we need a motion to go into executive session.
Yeah, there's been a request for executive session pursuant to 2C2 and 2C11 of the Open Meetings Act to discuss collective bargaining and litigation matters.
Okay.
Second.
We will be in.